Hey, this is Jay Young with King Operating. Have you ever considered paying less money in taxes? Would you like to do what the wealthy do and invest in oil and gas? Go on our website, kingoperating.com, and get my book about our model, ADD, Acquire, Develop, and Divest, or call our number 214-420-3000 to talk to somebody today about investing in oil and gas and saving money on your taxes.
The Jay Young Show is a weekly podcast featuring insightful discussions with anyone from big business CEOs, celebrities, to military heroes. Each interview is a personal conversation about business, life, and anything in between. And now, your host, Jay Young.
Hey everybody, this is Jay Young, and this is the Jay Young Show. Imagine that. But today we're gonna have Rich Emberlin on the show, and we're gonna learn a lot about his background. We're gonna learn a lot about what he's done in the future, and a lot about what he does to give back. You know, so it's people like this that was in the police force for years and years and years. He's had some associations with FBI and CIA and Chris Kyle.
Absolutely.
And a lot of other people that we're going to learn about. So, Rich, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to learn more about this patch in a minute.
Right on.
All right? You said it's okay if I talk about that.
Sure.
Right?
It's not an accessory I actually need.
All right. Good. Well, appreciate that. And I appreciate you being open because, you know, a lot of people, you know, I'm not afraid to ask, you know, so... And I asked before, and you said, hey, let's talk about it.
Yeah,
so,
it's the 2,000-pound elephant in the room.
Yeah. Let's talk about your past, or where did you grow up, and how did you start your career?
I'm a military brat. I was born in Waco, Texas. There used to be a base there called James Connolly. It's TSTI now, I think. It keeps changing. And from there, we moved overseas to Japan and Okinawa, where I primarily went to elementary school and learned how to speak Japanese and do origami and all that kind of stuff. And then we went down to Okinawa.
The war like was, sushi?
No, I hate it. And I'll tell you why. My dad used to make us go eat squid that was still moving that he'd cut off. We'd go to this black market. Yeah. He'd cut it off and make us eat it. So I'm out on sushi. But
yeah, okay.
You can always find a good steak at a sushi place in Dallas. But we lived there for a while during the war in Vietnam. We lived off base, actually, because there was no housing on base. So we went from there to California, Mather Air Force Base, where my dad was a instructor there, and New Hampshire, Illinois. He was a SAC guy, Strategic Air Command, so he was on alert back in the Cold War, and then he got into the survival schools. So he ended up being the commander of the Arctic Survival School in Alaska in Fairbanks for people who get shot down in cold areas, and then he was one of the commanders at SEER School, Survival, Escape, Resistance, and Evasion, in Fairchild Air Force Base, which is a week-long miserable school where they put you out in the woods, let you run around, and then they capture you and beat you up. And I think they have instructors now that back then they had Vietnamese instructors. Now they have Iraqi ones that speak Iraqi to you. And
you have
to pass that after pilot training
to
be able to fly into combat. So I went to first 2 years of high school in Fairbanks, and then I graduated in Spokane. But I came back down here because I was an in-state resident and went to North Texas.
Gotcha.
And got a degree there in 86.
Okay. And then where'd your career in 86? So in 86, you got your degree, and then where did you go from there?
I was working at the Denton State School as a lifeguard, and I was working at Dillard selling electronics when they sold electronics. And I was going to go into the Air Force and be a pilot, but prior to this injury, I got shot in the eye with a BB gun by my brother.
Oh, wow.
So my vision was 20/30, and there were no waivers back in 86. I could probably do it now, but everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
So I just failed my physical, and I was standing there. And we were talking earlier, you know, Mr. Dillard.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Bill Dillard, Sr., he was doing a store visit, and he walked up to me and said, do you have plans after you graduate next week? And I said, absolutely not. And he said, I want you to be an executive buyer in my program here in Fort Worth. And I said, okay, so little known factoid about me, I was a buyer for Dillard's for about a year and a half, and I hated it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, a lot of weekends.
Boy, and you're on salary, and I told somebody that the other day. We worked every day except for Sunday, the blue laws, you know.
Yeah.
Everything was closed, but we worked Saturdays and long hours
for
60, low pay.
70, yeah.
Matter of fact, when I left Dillard's, I'm not slamming on Dillard's. I enjoy Dillard's, but I was making $19,000 a year, and I told Mr. Dillard when I gave him my 2 weeks' notice, I said, I'm going to go join the Dallas Police Department. He said, you want to be a $12,000 a year cop? I said, they're actually paying me $26,000 to start. He said, really? I said, yeah, you can match that. I'll hang around. But unless you're married to a Dillard or dating a Dillard, you're not going anywhere in that company.
Right, right. Good.
That's
good,
how
good.
It works.
How long were you in the police force?
Just shy of 30 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Well, I got out.
You don't look that old.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it. I had this gray put in for you. I got out because a job came open called Live PD on Friday nights with Dan Abrams, and a friend of mine recommended the production company, you know, has recommended me to the production company, and they were paying me an obscene amount of money to retire 1 year early. I didn't make 30. I did 29 in 1 month, which is fine because I got my money out of our messed up retirement program.
Right.
And went to work in New York for one day each week on Fridays, and made a lot of money for a couple months.
But wow.
TV's fickle, you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, when the money's there, it's great.
I'd love to be back up there. And that show's great. It still is. And yeah. I know the hosts that are there now, they just change them out, you know.
Yeah.
So I did my
So what's the biggest thing about being a cop? What's the biggest thing that we could, as, you know, could we come up? Did you appreciate people coming up and thanking you
for
you know, being in that job? And what are some of the big things that you learned from that?
You know, there's a huge silent majority that loves us.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them don't even come up and say thank you, but we know they're out there. They buy us meals and restaurants, but there's a very vocal minority that hates us.
Mm.
And they're loud, they're on TV all the time, and they're the first ones to call us when they get scared,
right.
You know, which is ironic. You know,
right.
They don't want us around until their life's threatened or something's happening on their life. But no, I think it was a shock to me to have people just hate me because I put a uniform on.
Yeah.
You know, small percentage, but you're putting an X on your back.
Right.
And even Chris Kyle, I know we're going to talk about him, he said, you know, when I deployed, we'd deploy 4-6 months at a time. He goes, you guys deploy 24/7 for 30 years. Mm-hmm. He goes, that's messed up, man.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, you do end up with PTSD issues, and I went to the Center for Brain Health for that on his recommendation.
Yeah.
And it worked. It helps. I sleep better now, and I can relax more.
Right.
But it comes with a toll. I mean, there's a toll to be paid by being a police officer. You see things that, thankfully, you don't have to see, you know.
I've heard stories about a friend of mine. We were sitting on some oil and gas wells, and he was a cop, Steve Williamson, and he was telling me about some of the things. He was a highway patrolman, so he saw and just people that
guys have a dangerous job. Their cover is so far away. Their help, they're by themselves,
right? And you know, when you're there and you see somebody decapitated,
sure.
and trying to live, and you're just waiting for, you know, the ambulance or some kind of help, man, it's a tough job. I can see how that
it's human beings doing inhuman things to each other, and I never had expected that, because being raised in the military, you know, on bases, you go faster than 15 miles an hour and you got a ticket, you know, your MPs everywhere.
Right.
I just didn't expect people to be that savage with each other. You know, I ended up, sadly, having to shoot and kill a guy who killed his own son, his 3-year-old namesake, on a hostage rescue gone bad.
Mm.
And I just was dumbfounded. I still am.
Mm.
This has been 10 years. How do you shoot your own child, you know, and kill him?
Wow. So then he was coming after you, or
he was mad at his wife, actually.
Yeah.
And she escaped with the 2-year-old, and I had a young child, 10-year-old, 15-year-old. And I talked to the officers that answered the call, because that's always the best thing for a SWAT guy to do, because the story gets convoluted by the time some commander's telling you. And I said, what happened? He said he came home from a restaurant where he'd worked his way up from a dishwasher to a manager there on Greenville. It happened on Martell Street. And he said he just started arguing with his wife, and he threw the 2-year-old daughter into the wall so hard it broke the drywall. And that told me everything I needed to know. I was like, okay, this is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they escaped. He shot at the wife and the daughter. And we got there. We negotiated with that guy all night. And finally, he said, if you guys aren't going to come in, I'll kill this kid myself. And so we had a charge on the wall, cutting charge, explosive breach. And we breached it, and he shot the kid through the heart immediately. We found out later from the ME. And when I came into the room, he was on top of him, putting another round into him.
Mm.
But the kid was already dead.
Wow.
You're just, if hostage takers want to kill their hostage, they can every time.
Right, you know? Right.
Don't want them all.
So you went from the Dallas Police Department to SWAT. Is that a different
division? Well, I went to the Dallas.
Is that the same division?
I started out in Dallas, and everybody has to do their 5 years in patrol. And I answered calls in Northwest Dallas. And then after 3 years, I became a field training officer, mm-hmm. which makes me a salty veteran at 3 years, not. And I went down to Southwest Oak Cliff and taught rookies how to do my job. And that was really one of the most – people think SWAT and narcotics, all that stuff was the coolest part. I had probably more fun answering calls than anything else. I mean, getting to meet people, you know, good or bad.
Right.
But – I went from there to narcotics, who had I'd helped a sergeant out at shift change a couple of years earlier, and I saw Miami Vice, and I thought, I want to grow my hair long and drive a cool car, buy dope, and hang out.
Don Johnson, or
that's who I wanted to be. Yeah. White jacket and everything, and this sergeant called for help to transfer prisoners at shift change, and nobody wants to help. And I went down there, and I thought, you know what? I want to see what these guys look like. And I went down there. The sergeant remembered me, and 18 months later, he called me and said, I want you to come to narcotics and work for me.
Wow.
So I ended up growing my hair long. I didn't wear a white jacket, but I did all the other stuff. Had a cool 928 Porsche.
And
did the most dangerous job there can be, because they don't know you're a cop.
Right.
And they think, why am I going to give this guy this kilo, why don't I just keep the 50 grand and the kilo and just kill him?
Right.
You know, so I was there for about 3 years and got tired of having guns pointed at me and people not knowing I was a cop. And I would bring my warrants that I did develop over to SWAT. So I got to know the SWAT guys, mm-hmm. and they knew I brought good warrants. And when they had an opening, they called me.
Wow.
So I went over and interviewed for SWAT. Everybody hates on SWAT. There's 3,500 officers. There's supposed to be 3,500 officers on the department. There's only 32 SWAT openings.
Really?
And everybody talks smack about us in special operations, but when there's an opening, there's 900 people out there in line going, I want to be a SWAT guy.
Right.
But that was kind of a shoe-in deal. I knew I had it, but...
So you just go through the ranks of the Dallas Police Department. You don't come into the Dallas Police Department and stay the same level...
You can do 30 years in patrol.
You can do, okay.
All some right. people love it, and they do it, and they never even take a test to promote. Now, I promoted from apprentice police officer to police officer to corporal to senior corporal, but I didn't want to make sergeant, because then they have you. They can bury you in the jail on deep nights, because that deep night sergeant wants to get out of there, mm-hmm. and they start controlling your destiny. And I was in SWAT. I studied for the test, and I went, you know what? I'm having a good time over here, so... I just stayed a senior corporal, which is what most officers do.
Wow.
You don't want to get into the ranks where people can call you and tell you where you're going to be the next day.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
So what about narcotics? So you're running around buying kilos from these people off the street. I mean, tell me a good story there. Tell the audience here a good story about, you know, something that happened.
I'll tell you interesting stories. I don't know if they're good. They put me on Harry Hines in the strip clubs, because my sergeant, I heard him talking, he goes, we can put Emberlin in there, he won't, you know, mess this up. Because nobody was, you know, taking care of that area of town, and there's a lot of dope running through those places. And those girls don't like us. They all have biker boyfriends that make them sell meth, and I started developing cases in there, and then I would get to the boyfriend, and then I'd get to the heavy dealers, and I ended up down on a street called Nantucket one night with a confidential informant who brought me in, and... Long story short, I ended up staring at a gun with a guy who thought I was a cop, and he was right. Mm. And when people say, are you a cop? I said, I would always say no. I got to the point where I'd go, are you a cop? And they'd go, well, I was going to ask you that.
Oh.
You know, put them on their heels. But when they asked me if I was
a
cop.
First.
Yeah. They asked me if I was a cop. They were right every time. But I'd say no. Yeah. But this guy
was... But you had to say yes, right? Aren't you supposed to say
no,
yes?
No, that's what people think. No, okay. you can lie to people.
You can lie to people.
Yeah.
Especially narcotics.
The prostitutes all go, you can't arrest me. I asked you if you were a cop. I go, we're allowed to lie about not being a cop. Just don't give me this for that, you know?
So inside the strip clubs, these girls were selling meth through their biker boyfriend. What was this again?
They were dancers. They didn't want to be dope dealers, but their boyfriends, you know, if I said, hey, can you get me an 8-ball of meth? They're like, yeah.
Oh,
and they
go
get it. They weren't. I didn't usually, I would arrest them and interview them, but I'd say, okay, you're a bind. You need to introduce me to your boyfriend.
Right.
And then I'm Rich the dope dealer getting introduced, and I'm a cool guy. I'm in the club all the time.
Right.
And it goes like that, but I ended up down one of my last dope deals, thank God. I was down on Nantucket Street, and this guy sold me some dope, and I was leaving, and another guy came in and said, "What do we have here?" And I go, "Dude, I got my dope. I'm leaving." And he goes, "No, you're not. You're going to smoke up." And I went, "Oh, no. I'm not supposed to smoke crack."
Right.
It was crack in this case. And pointed a gun at me, and there must have been 15 people in this house. There were little kids running around, and the person that owned the house was Grandma, and she was sitting there eating, I remember, a bowl of, like, oatmeal, and she looked at me, and she said, "It's going to be okay, baby." And I'm like, "This guy's pointing a gun at my face."
Oh,
and I can't do the crack. So I actually, the door he had just come in was kind of still open, and I slapped the gun out of his way because there was no way I was going to get to my gun. I didn't want to start a gunfight in this room full of kids.
Oh, yeah.
Slapped the gun out of his hand and went through the door and ran out to my partner screaming, "Start the car. It's a convertible." I jumped into it. It's a Camaro. And we raced off, and I was sure they were chasing me. But the confidential informant, who was a female, we left behind, and she called me the next day, and she goes, "Those guys said you're welcome back." And I go, "What?" She goes, "They said no cop would get scared like that and run out. You're welcome back." And I said, "I'll be back." I didn't tell her that. We came back with a warrant and put them all in jail.
But oh, my gosh.
That was about enough for me.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I can't imagine that kind of life.
It was like a bad dream. You're like, am I going to wake up from this?
Oh, yeah.
You know, getting a gun pointed at your face.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. Those barrels might be a .22, but it looks that big. You know?
I mean, you're seconds away. I mean, you have to make a, you know, decision.
Life or death. Yeah.
I mean,
yes,
like, okay, so, I mean, like slapping the gun. I mean, what if you didn't? What if you'd have missed? What if?
Exactly.
I mean, there's so many different
I was down to zero options, though.
Wow.
You
wow,
know,
that's
so
unbelievable.
I'm no brave dude. I just wanted to get out of there.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I mean, that's I'm telling you, from, you know, a lot of the people that follow.
Sure. There's guys and girls out there doing it right now.
Yeah, that is
it's not my bag.
You know, the things you have to go through, because you're not making a ton of money. It's not like you're you know, you're making,
and you see a lot of money too.
Yeah,
you know,
you see a lot of money,
millions.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, the SWAT guys would always run our warrants, and I'd watch them run them, and I thought, I want to be one of those guys. Mm-hmm. They're going to run this warrant, tear everything up, gas it up, and then I have to go in and process the crime scene, and they're going to go eat lunch.
Right.
That looks like more fun.
Wow.
And it was a tough job. It really was. I mean, physically demanding. My back is fused. My neck needs to be fused. Blind in one eye.
Wow. Well, tell me about that.
This is a training accident. Thank God it happened in my 29th year of being on the department, or I wouldn't have had all these experiences. I was training with the military, a joint training exercise in Virginia Beach, and I was simply shooting a 40-millimeter grenade launcher with inert rounds. They weren't even blown up. It was just fun. But the recoil caused my eye weakened from that BB gun injury and a cataract surgery, a traumatic cataract surgery previous to that, caused me to tear my retina, and I went to a civilian doctor there in Virginia Beach, and he just misdiagnosed me.
Oh, my gosh.
So my retina became
misdiagnosed?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
And my retina became completely detached, and it was off for like 6 days when I got back to Dallas, and I talked to my doctor, and he goes, "What does it look like?" I said, all I see is light. It's like looking through a plastic bag or something. He goes, "How long has this been going on?" I said, 6 days. He goes, "I'm taking you in for emergency surgery right now."
Wow.
They do a thing called a vitrectomy, and they did two, and since it was off for so long, it didn't work out, and I have a thing called a macular pucker, so when I look at you, or letters, when you sign in on a website, letters are all messed up to make sure you're not a robot. Letters look like that to me. You're in a kaleidoscope, so I wear the patch so I don't get nauseated.
Wow. Wow, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's a pain. So, I'd rather see you in stereo, but...
Yeah. So did they give you a little bit more money or anything disabled for that?
Because
you were doing training for the police department.
Yeah. Wow. No. Social Security says this is not a disability either.
Yeah.
So there's ways around that I'm working on with an attorney that knows the SSI rules.
Right.
But it is, obviously, I've come to terms with it. It is a disability.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell what's going on out that window right now.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And you don't really... My wife throws car keys at me. I used to play baseball, and I don't know how far away they are. I can't catch them.
Right.
When I first got hurt, I would pour coffee onto the counter because now you know to put it right on the edge. You know, just little things.
Oh, my God.
You'll see me do this, you know, and set things down like that.
Right.
Or even something as simple as shaking your hand.
Yeah.
It may come up short. It may go too far, you know.
Right.
So it's got its difficulties, but there was another one-eyed guy in intel that had his eye shot out on a call. and he would take me out and teach me pirate secrets. He was like, okay, if you're at the mall, keep your wife on your left side because you'll be talking to yourself and she's gone into a store. Keep her on this side. Just little, there's little tricks of the trade.
Man, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It's all right.
You were also good friends with Chris Kyle.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Chris a little bit.
Sure.
I met Chris a couple of times. People that carry the load.
Mm-hmm.
I've done the carry the load thing. I've done the Chris Kyle Foundation. I went there last year. They had a really big, me and my buddy Brian Carlson went out to his fundraiser. And they also donated, the Helicopters for Heroes donated money to the Chris Kyle Foundation. What do they do with the Chris Kyle Foundation money?
They help veterans. You know, it's what did Chris used to say? We're here to serve those who've served us,
basically.
And that's where most of that money goes.
That's right. I mean, it's like if they need help financially because they need
a prosthetic, they need to help make their bills in between getting their veterans benefits taken care of, and that lapse, which they're starting to close, and Chris had a lot to do with that because he was anguishing over his, and he'd hit in order to get your disability, you have to see 5 independent doctors that say, yeah, I got shot in the helmet one time with traumatic brain injury, TBI. He had other injuries, and all these doctors, he'd done everything right and still couldn't get his benefits. And I was actually taking care of Senator Cornyn. And his chief of staff said, thank you so much, And we were opening the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge.
Mm.
A week later, it was the second time I took care of Cornyn, and his chief of staff came up and said, if there's anything I could do, you're great. Thank you for helping out. I said, I'm not supposed to do this, but I have a friend named Chris Kyle, and his book was out at the time. He goes, the sniper? I said, yeah. He goes, let me guess, veterans benefits? I go, yep. Senator Cornyn fixed it in 2 days.
Really?
He had a check.
Wow.
He had back pay. He had his disability rating. And
wow.
It wasn't a quid pro quo, but I said, you're going to sign one of your books to Senator Cornyn, and he doesn't even want one. And he signed it, and I took it up to Cornyn's office. He has an office here in Dallas, a temporary one, not just in Austin. And he opened it up. I didn't see what he had written in there. He started laughing. I go, what did he say, sir? He goes, thank you for telling the VA to get off their ass and get my shit fixed. And I went, wow, I don't think I would have done that to a senator, but whatever.
Yeah.
He was just funny that way.
Man,
he was a regular guy.
Well, tell me a couple of good stories about Chris. We're going to talk about, Chris real quick, and then...
I would tell you things that aren't in movies and in books. Chris, got to speak with Bradley Cooper one time, and Bradley, I don't think, got the idea of how funny Chris was, how smart he was. And I used to tell him, I said, I wish you were in charge of curing cancer. It'd be cured in a week. He was a super smart guy. But he played that country bumpkin, from Midlothian, Odessa, cowboy thing. And one of the funniest things that ever happened, we were sitting in his office at Kraft International, and I was just his law enforcement liaison, unpaid. He would say sniper, and I'd say, no, we say counter sniper in the police world. Don't say sniper, just semantics. We're all talking about the same thing, but I would just help him through that kind of stuff when he'd talk to different departments that wanted training from him. And one day we were sitting there, and he was popping balloons on his little laptop. Looks like he's working, but I knew what he was doing. And he looked up, and he went, I've got a Fox News interview in 25 minutes. I go, like, national? He goes, yeah. He goes, do you know where AMS is? And I don't know if you do. It's right off the toll road. It's where they put a drop down behind you of the city of Dallas, and all of a sudden you're in Dallas. You're talking to Brian Kilmeade or something.
I got you.
And I go, my wife's an actress. You're lucky. I know where that place is. We'll barely make it. And we'd been out on the range. We were dirty. We were in 5'11 clothes. Our elbows were bloody. He had a baseball hat on. And we pulled up to AMS. It's right off the toll road at, Frankfort. And it said, welcome, Chris Kyle, American Sniper. I go, hey, look at that. He goes, that's really nice. And we went inside, and the secretary was sitting in the middle of the room. And we're like, we're late, so we want to, hurry things along. And she didn't have time for us. And he goes, ma'am. And she looked up. She goes, we already filled a custodial position. And he started chasing me around because I started laughing at him. And he's chasing me around this place to beat me up. He wouldn't have really done it, but
the
producer came out and said, hey, Chris. And he was like, oh, hey, I'll get to you later. And he did his interview, but I thought I'd never let him off the hook on that one.
They never thought he was Chris Kyle.
Well, his book was out, but they weren't putting the face with him,
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff like that.
So Bradley Cooper met Chris Kyle one time because this wasn't about.
He didn't meet him in person. He met him on the phone, actually.
Okay.
And
but it wasn't about his death. Bradley Cooper's going to do the movie. I was getting
yeah,
at.
Yeah, threw a big kink Bradley into Cooper it.
Because of the sniper, because of all the different
sure.
great things that Chris did.
Yes.
You know, he met him then because it wasn't like, okay, well, you know, since Kyle has passed and he got shot, you know. And
they were in the middle of writing the screenplay, so
oh
how do you finish
gosh.
That? You
wow.
know? And Jason Hall, who wrote it, Oscar nominated, mm-hmm. and he's like, what do I do? He didn't ask
wow.
me, but that's, you know, they ended it the way, you know, I love the movie, but I hate how it ends because, you know, people go, do you watch that movie? I go, no, I know how it ends.
Yeah.
You know, and that funeral procession, all that video from going down to Austin was shot from my wife's computer, believe
oh,
it or
really?
Not. Yeah.
Wow.
Or they wouldn't have it going under the bridges and
oh, yeah.
all that stuff.
That is unbelievable.
But no, it was
unbelievable.
That was sad, but no, for the most part, he was a fun guy to be around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just a regular guy, and
yeah.
he didn't talk about how many people he killed. He talked about people he couldn't save.
Right.
You know, that tormented him, actually.
Wow.
And he wasn't allowed to put in the book that he had shot a child as his first sniping kill.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to go to the premiere. I thanked Mr. Cooper for being my friend for an hour and a half and putting on 44 pounds and all that. So he was already skinny by the time the premiere came out. Thanks Sienna Miller for cussing just like Taya does. And she did a great job.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I went up to Mr. Eastwood, and I was with a guy named Bill Wayburn. I don't know if you know him. He's the sheriff of Tarrant County. I'm a reserve deputy for him. And he goes, we're going to go bother him. And I said, you know, I don't usually bother celebrities, but he's one.
Oh, yeah.
And he was recently divorced and had about six women around him. He's 83 years old. And Bill, the sheriff, walked up to him and said, Mr. Eastwood, we're cops from Texas. And he's like, back up, girls. I got to talk to these boys.
Oh, wow.
And I said, thank you for showing the fact that he had to shoot a child. I said, the Navy made him take that out of the book, and it tormented him. He said, they sent me out to do that,
mm-hmm.
and now they're saying it's so obscene, they're going to take it out of my book.
Right.
And I said, thank you for putting that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, it was tough to do, but it's what happened, Rich.
Yeah.
So me and Chris, and knowing Chris, I got to meet a lot of neat people. That and dignitary protection, you know, meeting every president
right.
since Carter, except for Reagan, you know. Not while Carter was in office, and no, I wasn't at the Kennedy assassination, but, you know, when Carter would come build homes for Habitat for Humanity,
oh, yeah.
Ford used to come down here and shop,
yeah.
but every president since then, you know, I've worked with liaison with the Secret Service and had a
wow.
good time meeting those guys.
Wow. And you had a little bit of a film career.
An accidental film career.
Accidental, okay.
Yeah, I never wanted to be on TV at all,
yeah.
but First 48, which is a very popular show, was shooting in Dallas, and the chief over homicides, a guy named Jesse Reyes, and he came over, they assigned him to SWAT, and I know what he was thinking. I gotta go to these prima donnas, you know. They get assigned, he's never been to SWAT, but we get this, you know, they draw pictures of us with blow dryers in our holsters, you know, because we gotta get our hair just so and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And all they ever see us doing is working out and eating. They don't see us in the middle of the night on a hostage rescue or rappelling or shooting at the range unmercifully. If it's raining, we're training.
Mm-hmm.
But the other cops just see us eating and working out. So there's a lot of issues with that. But it was – Chris would even come out and go with us on warrants. You know, we'd get permission for him to come out. I'd say, you want to go on a warrant? He's like, hell yeah.
Right, right.
And he would – the sergeant would be like, is that guy going to try to shoot somebody? Make sure he doesn't have a gun, you know? So, but
Chris always had a gun.
So First 48's out there shooting in Dallas.
First 48.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'd never watched it until one of the First 48 guys came to Criminal Intel and I started watching. It's a great show.
Hmm.
And,
what station is that on?
It's on A&E.
A&E?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
First 48.
It's about homicides.
Okay.
If you don't solve it within the first 48 hours is the theory, you're not going to solve it.
Ah, gotcha. So, okay. Makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
So
okay.
the homicide chief, Jesse Reyes, went over to SWAT and found out we were actually fun guys and funny and doing a lot of hard work. And he called the network and said, you ought to do a show about Dallas SWAT. So I give him credit for being the creator of the show.
Wow.
And it was pretty successful. We did three seasons, which is more than most TV shows did.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted us to wear, they singled out eight of us to like highlight. And I unfortunately was one of them. And nobody wanted to put on a mic. And these poor producers, they're young guys, are walking around. And Chief Reyes came up and said, I got these guys down here. and they're going to lose their jobs if you guys don't start wearing mics. I said, you know, I like this guy Matt over here. I said, I'll wear a mic. I said, but I told Matt, he came over, and Chief Reyes said, he'll wear a mic. And I said, it's not going to be a good story. I just broke up with my girlfriend in front of her friends. I'm divorced. I'm trying to fight for child custody. I just shot this dude. I'm going through that investigation, and my life's a wreck. And he goes, that's an episode. So the first episode, yeah, I shot this guy with a less lethal round. Oh, who had stabbed and killed his neighbor, which didn't kill him, but it was just, you know, he still get investigated. And that was the very first episode. Oh, and when it came out, everybody's like, oh my God, you know, your peers. This lady during the show, I was dating a girl who worked at a hair salon, and I went over to get back together with her. And with the first scene, and I went up to the lady that was working behind the desk and said, is Janine here? And she goes, yeah, she's over there waiting on you. And I walked over there. Well, what I didn't know was they left the camera on her, and they said, who is that? She goes, that's Rich. That's Janine's boyfriend. He's our hottie from Swati. So they left that in, and I came to work the next day. I watched it mortified on a Thursday night. It came on at 8 o'clock on Thursday nights, and I went to work. Bravest thing I ever did in police work was going to work after being on a reality TV show.
Being the hottie from Swati.
Being the hottie from Swati. So we work out every day for an hour and a half, and then we go shower and, you know, get cleaned up and shave. And I went into the toilet area and sat down and looked at the door. There's always some good banter on the walls, and it says, the hottie from Swati sits on this potty. Went into the shower, and there was a laminated one. The hottie from Swati washes his loins in this shower. And if you tear it down, there'll be two up the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh wow,
I've been the hottie from Swati.
There's a subtitle right there, kid. Hottie from Swati.
12 years, and I still get called that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, after 12
years. But the thing was, you take a beating from your peers.
Yeah.
But it allowed people at restaurants to come up and go, hey, man, I really appreciate what you do. Because they would see our briefings and see how hard we tried not to hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how meticulous we were.
Yeah.
We're not a bunch of jackbooted thugs out to kill people.
Right, right.
So it was real good for public perception. Recruiting went up. The recruiters will tell you, I hate that show. Everybody comes down here from Ohio and Michigan and all these other states and go, I want to go to the SWAT team right off the bat.
Right.
And probably even their entire career, they're not going to get over there. You know, yeah. It's just luck.
Wow.
But recruiting went up. Our public perception was great.
Right.
And I got the thickest skin in the world out of it, you know, because
I bet you did.
But I also got other jobs from different networks that if they did a show about SWAT teams, they would hire me as a technical director because obviously I'm the smartest SWAT guy ever because I was on TV. No, the smartest SWAT guy's in Michigan cleaning his guns and he doesn't even have a TV.
Right.
But that, you know how this media thing works. If you're on TV, you've got to be the best one. I would say I'm
an
average.
But if you write a book, you're the smartest guy in the world. So.
Absolutely.
Same thing. Well, if you think about it,
from a
cop standpoint, I mean, we never really see cops unless they're stopping us and giving us a ticket.
Right.
You know, so...
But think of all the cop shows from Car 54, Where Are You, to Adam 12, to Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
I could go on all day, and I don't know why people never tire of cop stories. Now you got all the NCISs that my wife makes me watch, which I'm bored with because I've seen heads cut off. I've seen people dead, and you know.
Yeah.
But it does let people see.
Yeah.
It gave them an insight because ours was called a docudrama. They'd follow us home and see me with my daughter,
right.
You know. And that we're real people,
right,
you know,
right,
regular people.
That's the best thing. I mean, I walk up to the cops all the time. And
I know you do.
I should say policemen, but I just...
You can call us cops. You know. We used to wear copper badges. That's where that came from.
Oh, is that right? Yep. Okay, all right.
But no, I just would say I was an average guy trying to do an above average job. I was nothing special.
Man.
Still am not, but I tried hard.
Well, that's being very humble. I appreciate that.
Well,
it's people like you that help protect us. I mean, help protect us, you know, in whatever narcotics or SWAT or... Just watching, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I was driving down here today, and there was a guy that texting, and his car was all over the place. And then we left a Maverick game, my wife and my daughter, we left a Maverick game, and we were headed north on the tollway. And this lady, well, you know who it was at the time, car was just back and forth. And so I got put on my flashers, and I followed. I had to go all the way to Frisco before the cops found out and stopped. But we called 911, and we followed all the way. And
DWI? I mean,
we did the whole thing, and she stopped. And then they made us wait, you know, 30 minutes because they wanted to make sure they give them all the test, you know, and everything. She was really drunk.
Yeah, a lot of people.
But it's I think people have a good perception of cops, and they're here to help you.
Sure.
I mean, they're not here to run you down. And,
no.
And, I mean, every once in a while we speed. You know,
I never gave a ticket out when I was in patrol. I didn't write very many tickets. I never gave a ticket out for anything I'd ever done. I've sped. I did not give out speeding tickets. I gave out one to a guy I caught on a motorcycle doing 155, and I thought, I've never done that. Wow. He's getting a ticket. But I always had insurance, and I always had a driver's license, so those are the only tickets I ever wrote,
right.
Really. I might stop them for speeding.
Right.
But cutting a corner to avoid a traffic control device, people cutting through gas stations, I've done that. Yeah. It's against the law. People don't know that. I'm not going to write a ticket for it. But I really am against cops writing tickets, because you want to be popular with the citizenry, and then I pull you over, and it's like highway robbery. I take $250 out of your wallet,
right.
Unless you go to court,
right.
Miss work, you right. know, all this kind of stuff. I'm not into the ticket thing. There needs to be a better way, or a different division of people to hate, not us.
There you go. Yeah. Hate the people that are making our lives miserable,
yeah.
and kill us and right. sell drugs to our kids. And
right.
Those people need to, you know, worry about.
Right.
But, anyway.
Sure.
So what's going on now, and what do you see yourself in a few years, 5 years?
Well, like you, I'm writing a book, and you probably know that's a huge thing.
It's an undertaking.
Oh, my gosh. Definitely. I thought I'd be done in a month, and it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
And I'm working with Kim Gatlin, who wrote a bestseller, and she really helps me out a lot. She has four brothers, so I can speak the language that cops speak, and that's a huge undertaking. Hope that comes out by September. I have a company called 540 Solutions, which is an executive protection company. And I just work with people, you know, do small investigations, you know, help people who are going through divorces and their ex is coming over and they're afraid they're going to kill them. And I'll sit there with them. And, you know, I still have my police powers because I'm a reserve and nothing's going to happen in these situations, but they're scared, you know.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a word of mouth thing. And I don't tell the last person who the next person was, because put their business out there.
Because Craft with Chris Kyle, was that more shooting?
Yeah, but we also did executive protection. Yeah.
But he was doing security as well or something?
Yeah, we did that as well.
Yeah.
You know, people would call and, you know, want to be protected by him because he was Chris.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd go with him. I did a deal for the Israeli Defense Foundation, which is their Wounded Warriors here in Addison. They just wanted some security there.
Mm-hmm.
And me and two other criminal intelligence guys, you know, we know how to blend and wear a suit and not stick out like a donut eating cop, you know,
right.
and blend, but still be able to protect them. So I do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do some stuff with the Department of Defense. And I teach for a company called Safari Land. I teach SWAT schools around the country.
Where do people find you? Are you on Facebook, LinkedIn?
Yes. I have richemberland.com.
Richemberland.com.
I'm on Facebook, and I don't tweet too much. They'll be bored on Twitter, but I'm on there too.
You and Trump. Trump does a lot more.
Yeah,
and
way
not as much
more.
Lately, but
a little off the cuff.
But, but richemberland.com. So
yes, sir.
If you need some security or if you need some help, just, you know, it's a good spot to go
and
see what their services are there.
Sure. Well,
thank you very much for
being on. Thank you for having me.
The show today. And look forward to seeing you again and having you back on.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Everybody, be sure and thank Rich Emberlin. Go on his website and check him out. And also, I think it's a great thought just to go back into the Chris Kyle stuff, because I've met Chris a couple of times. Michelle and I have met Chris a couple of times and just loved him and
miss him.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And I'd still go to the Chris Kyle Foundation parties and fundraisers, and we donate money. And I love doing that kind of thing. And it's something that you need to go back and think
you for
about
that too. And so is family.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, giving Helicopters for Heroes is coming up really soon. That charity raised $300,000 last year, and a third of it went to Chris Kyle Foundation. A third of it went to American Valor, and I'm not sure if Kill 22 might have got the other $100,000, but
probably.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, great. But just, you know, and at the Stars game, you know, they always appreciate. You know, military, and it's always good because, man, these guys, I mean, to think about being shot at, you know, and being in that position, and, you know, these guys aren't making, you know, a ton of money, and the satisfaction that, you know, they get when they manhandle somebody or take somebody in or whatever,
like Chris
you guys
said,
do.
It's our duty to serve those who serve us.
Yeah, that's awesome. See, that is just great because I know a lot of the people today, you know, where's my check? You know, they don't want to work and they want my check, you know, and And
these guys know, and girls sign up not even knowing they're going to get paid. You know, right. they write the open check.
Or live.
You know,
that's
open check. They could come back in a box or horribly maimed. And
exactly.
You and I both know those folks.
Right. Terrible. So, you know, it's great to just think about that for a second. You know, think about your military people and thank them. When you see a policeman, you know, don't pull one over, you know, or don't speed just to get pulled over and go, hey, well, I was wanting you to pull me over so I could
That's actually happened to me.
Yeah. No, that's the reason why. You know, I was going to go faster. I was going to go slower. I was going slower until I saw you.
If you want to get out of a ticket, say, hey, I was speeding so you'd stop me so I could thank you for your service.
Exactly.
Here's a good one.
Give him $100.
No.
Just kidding. But anyway, next time you see a policeman, you know, be sure and thank them and thank your military people. And
absolutely.
Just, that's what this world's all about. It's giving back. So thank you very much for being on the show. And thank you for coming in today. And
my pleasure.
Be sure and look on our website. Think about my book. I signed this one.
Thank you.
For Mr. Rich here. We've signed it. And if you want one, go to the website. Go to one of the places you came on here. If you're on YouTube, be sure and like me on YouTube. And we have
my book.
We're on LinkedIn and we're everywhere. So thank you very much. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you here next week.